Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, folks. And it is now or never. And you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions, as well as this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. We've got a lot of debates to get through. And so we're going to, as a matter of fact, fortunately, we've got Paul Venable with us today. And so welcome aboard, Paul. And thanks for taking out the time to help go through these things. We've left off. Actually, what we're going to do, folks, is where we left off, we're going to kind of catch back up. But there are a few things that we really wanted to cover that I having scrubbed through the debates again, I figured that there were some issues or things that were brought up that are imperative. You know, when I tell you that the states are bad actors, and that's going to be one of the first things we'll cover, you know, that's just me telling you that. But when you hear them actually say this, we actually covered this in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania covered it. And so one of the things we kind of want to do is kind of go through how, you know, the federal government, by it taking on certain roles, it removed the ability for the states to do things to actually create kind of economic warfare against each other by going out and creating their own treaties, printing their own money. So we can see when they created the federal government, they didn't create a federal government with all power. They gave it the very specific power it needed to kind of keep the states in check. But the states had the residual power, which was the majority of the power. In other words, when you look at the enumerated power, you know, if government was going to take over anything, that was all left to the states. It wasn't necessarily for the federal government to assume. And this is why we go through all of this, because we actually prove that the federal government can't assume any form of power without the states delegating that to them first. It's the same thing with properties, same thing with roles, responsibilities, and so forth. So what we want to do, and what I'm going to do, is I'm going to give you more of a thorough view from these debates as how they actually came right out and said. And, you know, as we go through these things, if we're only finding just a couple of declarations and it's not argued, then I think people all of a sudden, it becomes either common knowledge or it was a common understood and accepted thing. Yes, the states have been bad. Even our state was bad. And so, Paul, how are you doing today? You ready?
I'm great, GR, and this is a valuable discussion, so I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so where we are, we kind of jump back up to January 16th. And we're on, let me see, make sure I've got the focus on the page. This is page 17. And folks, I haven't put Pennsylvania back up or up on the page yet of what we use, so that you're more than welcome to download it and then use the ratification debates. So if you want to read through what we did with Pennsylvania, because it's all highlighted. All you've got to do is just play back the podcast. Then you can sit down and actually read through them. Then you can kind of see for yourself. And this, I really encourage this because this gives you the opportunity to actually see the stuff before and after to find out, you know, well, you know, that's kind of important stuff. We need to cover that. And so why aren't we covering that? Well, if you think that I missed something, then bring it up. But I think you're going to find it's kind of like the scriptures. You know, you can always tell if somebody's using the scriptures to kind of create a misinterpretation because they'll only take a small fragment of it. What I really try to do is I try to get a greater fragment of the information so that you can see I covered everything. But more importantly, you'll probably find other things that will help you understand because they're walking through the facts. I mean, it's like, it's not like they're hitting bullet points. These guys are orators, and they're telling, you know, a story. They're trying to frame something, and so they're, for the most part, they're pretty thorough. I mean, there are a few like Madison that's really succinct. Boom, he hits you here. He hits. I mean, he's like a boxer in the ring. He's just straight to the point of delivering punches here, here, here. Sometimes he gets into some theory, but nine times out of ten, he's getting straight to the point. But anyway, let's get to the point of the debates here itself. And so we're starting off with the Honorable Mr. Rufus King.
Sure. You want me to take it from there?
Sure. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. The Honorable Mr. King rose and assured the convention that the state of Rhode Island did, by a solemn resolution sometime since, recall its delegates from Congress. The Honorable Mr. Gorham confirmed what Mr. K had said and added that during the session of the Federal Convention, when seven states only were represented in Congress, application was made by two companies for the purchase of lands, the sale of which would have sunk $7 or $8 million of dollars of the Continental debt. And the most pressing letters were sent on Rhode Island to send on its delegates, but that state refused. The consequence was the contract could not then be made. Mr. Bishop confessed himself convinced of the fact. He proceeded to observe that if the states shall refuse to do their duty, then let the power be given to Congress to oblige them to do it. But if they do their duty, Congress ought not to have the power to control elections. In an uncontrolled representation, says Mr. B., lies the security of freedom, and he thought by these clauses that freedom was sported with. In fact, says he, the moment we give Congress this power, the liberties of the yeomanry of this country are at an end. But he trusted they would never give it, and he felt a consolation from the reflection.
So, in essence, they were pointing out how the states were bad actors. And in essence, this was more about the fact that Congress had the ability to call for a time and place of elections for federal elections. And Rufus King basically said, hey, there were points in time where states called back their delegates from the convention. And when they said the convention here, they weren't talking about the Philadelphia Convention of the Constitution. They were talking about Continental Congress. And so they were pointing out that at that mode, these states kind of pulled themselves out of the government. And so Congress couldn't do what it needed to do. And see, here's the thing. If for whatever reason there are delegates that are removed or, you know, are not present, it doesn't mean Congress can't move forward. Now, there's an oblique reason behind this information, because we were told, and this goes to what Lincoln did during the Civil War, we know that after the states started seceding from the Union, they pulled back their members of Congress. Well, it got to a point where what did Lincoln do? Lincoln shut down the Congress. He didn't have the authority to do that. And it goes to show right here in the Continental Congress that there were a point in time where there was only seven states that were represented out of the 13. And it didn't mean that Congress couldn't convene. I mean, what is 7 out of 13? My beer math tells me that's almost 50%. One more and it would be less than 50%. Does that make sense?
7 out of 13 is over 50. Well, no, you're right. 7, 6.5.
Right, right.
Would be 13. So it's just barely over 50%.
Yeah, just barely over 50%. So, in other words, they barely had 50% quorum. And had they gone one more state, they would have been under 50%. But it didn't mean Congress couldn't do its work. Because when the powers are delegated, so in the framework or in the context of the southern states, when they seceded, the quorum was no longer affected when they were gone. if one state was gone, but they had all representatives of the other states, they had 100% because there was one less state in the union and its representation went down. Now, when, you know, we had all of these other states, my point is, and again, this is an oblique or a sideways slide into helping you understand that when people were telling you that Lincoln, you know, rightfully so, shut down Congress, he had no right to do that. We are a Republican form of government. We are not a monarchy nor an executive form of government. The power of government resides in our representation. You got to understand, folks, that in a democracy, we the people vote for everything and decide everything for ourselves. In a Republican form of government, we establish a representative and they take our suffrage into government and vote for us, which is why there's two houses in Congress and two houses in every state except for Nebraska that actually there is suffrage. There's the suffrage for the people in the House of Representatives. Your representative is voting for you. And in the Senate, the representation in the Senate should be voting for the state, or at the state level, it should be voting for the county. Because we have lost the understanding of a Republican form of government and the fundamental principle of our form of government, we're accepting a government acting outside of how it was denned, how it was formed, and how it was defined. And so, sorry about the little lecture here, but I, you know, these little things can really bring up a lot of information that helps you put more things together. It's more than just the words or what they're, the issue that they're covering, because sometimes they actually have, they're providing us a much broader perspective that we, how we can see certain things like what I just shared with you, that this is, this also pointed out, not that it's just that the states were bad actors, but that a state did not have to be represented for Congress or, yeah, for our representative body to actually have to shut down. There were points in time during the Continental Congress where they were almost down under 50, almost under 50%, and they still were operating, which proves that Lincoln had no authority to do what he did. There was not; it wasn't in the Constitution. He didn't have that authority. Anyway, and I think it's important, folks, that we stop idolizing, you know, Lincoln as, you know, some great man. He had a very important function that I think was, it was more of a calling from God to help move the country into a direction that allowed us to finally, you know, do away with slavery and move forward. And there were lots of things and lots of players. And it always comes down to the fact that because people are involved in every institution, I don't care what the institution is, it could be your church, it could be your government, it could be your business. As long as people are involved, there is always the potential of corruption. There is always the pretension, the potential of, you know, somebody tarnishing the image of that company, that church, that, you know, that government, that institution. I mean, look at what Biden's doing. He's not just tarnishing it, you know, our reputation worldwide. This is what, and this is why it's so important to actually elect people of character. And the fact is, it's shameful. It's an indictment that our system has become so corrupt that they're able to throw up such terrible characters and tarnish our image and sully our good name. Anyway, we're going to move down a little bit, and actually there was something that was regarding election attendance. So we understood, this is a little nugget, because we understand today how many people vote. And as a matter of fact, you know, Paul, in the election for Missouri that you just had, what was the percentage of people voting, registered voters to votes cast and so forth?
I can tell you that overall in the last general election, I think about 60% of registered voters voted.
Okay, 60%.
Which amazes me. Okay.
All
so
right.
Understand, these are people who bothered to register, but they didn't vote.
There you go. All right. So now the way they use the language, it's kind of hard to follow. But here's an interesting little nugget, because what we talk about, indifference and apathy of the voter, they experienced it too. Go ahead. We're down on election attendance, and this is on page 18. Yeah.
The highlighted part?
Yep, just the highlighted, but this is a small little fragment. Yep.
Okay. And this is by Mr. Strong.
Uh-huh.
We also know that our town meetings for the choice of officers are generally attended by an inconsiderable part of the qualified voters. People attend so much to their private interest that they are apt to neglect this right. Nations have lost their liberties by neglecting their privileges. Consequently, Congress ought to have an interposing power to awaken the people when thus negligent.
So he's creating an argument to actually give Congress, you know, this power of being able to do this, but they don't have the power to actually do it, because the power that was granted only gives them the power to you know, set the time, place for the federal elections. But it doesn't give them the power to say, we will, you know, we're going to pick everybody up and everybody will vote. In other words, when you look at today and the way they've bent over backwards in creating, you know, it's almost like it's not a Republican form of government anymore when you actually have ballot harvesting. I'm just going to dive into this one little issue. When we look at ballot harvesting means that somebody takes your blank ballot and they fill it out for you. And so what that means is you are no longer seeking representation. You are surrendering it to whomever came by, thinking that you can trust them. We don't have a trusting form of government. We have a Republican form of government. And if you choose not to vote, then that is your right, and that must be respected. Ballot harvesting is absolutely criminal, because it is stealing and giving to one person or an entity the ability to seek representation for others when they don't deserve it. They only deserve to vote once for their representation, not as many ballots that they can harvest to actually move the ballots and move the outcome in a favorable direction for them. So just to be under, you know, just placing this under a Republican form of government, how is it that we've actually allowed harvesting to even occur? Because the way the judges and the way the government is operating, they are operating under a democratic form of government. Does that make sense?
I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hope I'm not losing you when I'm going down some of these.
No, you're not losing me. I just try to mute when I'm not speaking so that no background sounds.
Yeah, that's okay. And that's appreciated. But the whole point is, I believe if we shine the light on, you know, helping people understand a Republican form of government, we can actually start creating the argument, you know, the true narrative of what we need to be seeking and how our elections are supposed to be. You know, you do not have a right to just throw your vote to give it to somebody else because you're ignorant. If you're ignorant, mm-hmm. then you don't vote. You just don't show
right.
up. You don't get a ballot. This is why
correct.
We have to go back to those, you know, if you don't want to participate, then you don't. But the fact is, when we got 60% of the voters in Missouri, and they've now legalized the ability to take the other 40% and use those votes, you know, as an institution or as a body of people deemed fit, that is not a Republican form of government.
Correct. So what's happened, GR, is they have started to, you know, I'm old enough to remember when you simply had to go to the polls to vote, and that was your choice. And so you either went or you didn't. But we're starting to institutionalize this idea to send out ballots to and it's completely out of hand. You know, it's bad enough to send out ballots to people who are registered voters and they don't use them, and then they get harvested. But it's even worse when you have states that are sending out ballots to anyone at the last known address, even if no one's there, or can you imagine this, to dead people? But it's completely out of control. Okay, we need to go back to having the citizen show up to exercise their citizenship. And if they don't want to, like you said, that's their choice.
Yes, it's when we look at how they've gone down this path of ballot harvesting by legalizing it, then, yeah, because there's been a lot of push, you know, from the conservative entertainers and social media, where there are a lot of people that are saying, hey, and there's a group called Focus the Vote that is, trying to help educate people that, you know, we need to, you know, exploit the laws that the Democrats have created, because they're creating these ballot harvesting laws. And if we're not out there harvesting them, then they get to harvest all of them.
Oh, guess what? Just a few minutes ago, while you were talking, I had something flash across my screen that Donald Trump is going to start supporting mail-in ballots.
Yeah, mail-in ballots, voting. Yeah. So the Focus the Vote, and you hear this on conservative entertainers, instead of arguing the narrative along with saying, hey, they've created these laws, and if we're not exploiting them, then, you know, we're going to continually lose. But the bottom line is, we can't embrace these laws. We have to exploit them and fight them, because we need to restore our representation to model after a Republican form of government and not a democracy and not a party form of government. Because bottom line, that's how it's playing out. The parties themselves, and this is why a third party needs to stand up and say, look, this is more of a monarchical party form of democratic socialism. Because that's what we have. And we've got two parties that are trying to actually steal the votes, when we believe that those votes could easily have gone towards a third party candidate. The facts are out there by just going to the rolls of the Republican Democratic Party. I'm going to tell you right now, you'll probably find that there are more registered Republicans, because they like to follow the law and they will actually go out and pay their dues to be a Republican, than there are Democrats. More registered, not voting Democrats, party, registered with the party paying. See, most Americans don't want to do that. First, they don't want to pay any money. And secondly, you know, they don't want to be on the, you know, the screen or the radar, you know, of these people that they really don't want to have any time of day to spend time with. And so, you know, if somebody actually did the research, because you could actually prove that when you took the rolls of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, I'm just going to come up with a number, it would come up to like 22% of America. Well, how is it that we're allowing them to determine by using ballot harvesting and everything? They've basically not only stole our electoral college, they're now stealing the elections.
Correct.
If we're a representative government, then the vote must represent the person voting has the right to vote. If that person does not vote, then that vote is gone. You can't harvest. Harvesting right. is unconstitutional in a true Republican form of government. And folks, we're going to be getting into this when we get back into the structure of constitutional counties, but I'm just going to share this with you because we're going straight into break right now. So, Paul, when we come back from the promo, you'll know it, because you can't hear much right now. But bottom line, folks, this is what you need to know, that when we start creating constitutional counties, we're going to start using grand juries, common law grand juries, to actually go after all of these scoundrels that are violating the Constitution and the laws of the land. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what I was really trying to point out, and, you know, I'm not sure if you got this, Paul, but by using the education of the petitions and by educating people in the counties and creating constitutional counties, we'll actually be able to start obtaining from common law grand juries indictments and declarations that clarify that our right of government, of a Republican form of government, is being denied by our legal system and by, you know, our actual state governments, and how these harvestings can actually be proven as not as more of a feeding and sustaining a Democratic Party system and not a Republican form of government, not representative of the people. Go ahead.
Sure. One of the things I think we ought to put a tick in our calendar, because I can see a question coming up, is how the people would, or how the counties or whatever, would set up grand juries, common law grand juries. I see that coming up as a question, and maybe if not at this point, maybe sometime in a future broadcast, we could outline that.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I point people to the NLA, as well as Paul Nally in Georgia, and I've got to have Paul Nally back, because if there's a guide, a book, or what have you, to how people can basically form, not people, but how the people's government, which would be your county commissioners, would be able to form, you know, a county common law grand jury, then that's, because this is so important. I'm going to just get right to this. In Georgia, Fulton County, they're getting ready to deliver indictments against Trump and basically drag Trump into Georgia over crimes that they're seeking, they're manufacturing, I should say, regarding, you know, what he said on the phone. You know, like, he had the ability to coerce the governor, because that's what they're asserting. His words were direct coercion, where, you know, it was almost like he had a gun going through the phone line. Go find those votes. And what they're doing is setting a precedent, but it's helping people understand now the power of the common law grand jury. The problem is that the common law grand jury is not standing. It's a grand jury. Fulton County grand jury is not standing on the laws of the Constitution. They are manufacturing laws based and twisting and perverting laws. And so this is why we have to really look, is what they're saying something that is actually founded in law? And no, it's not. It's nothing for the federal government to be involved in, or maybe it's a state law. Well, is it within the state constitution? And you're going to find that probably not. You know, a lot of laws that they're coming up with, like, you know, communicating a threat over the phone, is that a state law or a federal law? Do you know, Paul?
I don't know.
It's a federal law.
Okay.
But the question is, does the federal government have the authority to establish that law?
Is it in Article 1, Section 8?
No, it's not. And that's
and
the
and they don't have the authority.
That's the whole point, folks, is the majority of criminal law, all criminal law that we're dealing with today, almost all of them are stemming from federal, like drug laws. All drug laws stem from the federal government. The federal government has outlawed all of these drugs, the sale of these drugs, the transportation of these drugs. And so the states have kind of just followed suit, taking up these laws. It's not we, the people, have to delegate to our states what laws we want them to enforce. Not let the federal government incite and tell them, okay, this is what you have to do. They don't have that authority. That's the whole point. When it really comes down to what powers are delegated, those are the only powers they can exercise. So in this next one, this is about paper money. And so this is on January 17th, new day now. And if you're there, this is the Honorable Mr. Turner. And it's actually down a bit in this long oration that he has. It's on page 23.
I'm here and I'm ready when you are.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. It gives me pain. And I believe it gives pain to others, thus to characterize the country in which I was born. I will endeavor to guard against any injurious reflections against my fellow citizens, but they must have their true characters. And if I represent them wrong, I am willing to make concessions. I think that the operation of paper money and the practice of privateering have produced a gradual decay of morals, introduced pride, ambition, envy, lust for power, produced a decay of patriotism and the love of commutative justice. And I am apprehensive these are the invariable concomitants of the luxury in which we are unblessedly involved, almost to our total destruction. In the lower ranks of people, luxury and avarice operate to the want of public duty and the payment of debts. These demonstrate the necessity of an energetic government. As people become more luxurious, they become more incapacitated for governing themselves. And are we not so? Alike people, alike prince.
And so,
wow, that's a mouthful.
It's a really good insight of how they really looked at, you know, a government that actually started providing and people becoming lazy and getting government to do things for them.
It's also very well said, because what hasn't changed is the nature or people or human nature. The founders understood that when they wrote the Constitution, and for some reason, we operate as if we think somehow we've repealed the laws of human nature. Well, we haven't, and this is just an example of how he's describing us today.
Right.
The paper money.
These insights are universal.
Correct.
Okay, and. And so, folks, I can't tell you enough that these men were dealing with the exact same problems. It's just that they were honest about it, and they weren't trying to exploit it like we see in our government today, because our government has become so corrupt, because the money that flows in to get these guys into election is actually subverting our government, because they're actually telling them, yeah, we want you to do these things. And this is how they're serving the corporate governance and our slow migration or evolving into this global governance. And these guys don't care, because there's something in it for them, and they have no clue that when the transition completes and their job is done, they've finished the job of getting us out of our protective government and into the most vulnerable enslavement of mankind ever, they become worthless. They don't realize this. Those guys, 9 times out of 10, let's be clear. What is the one thing that they don't need anymore once they have full control?
They don't need...
What's the one thing that they want to get rid of and get the earth down to a very specific, you know, I'll just say sustainability? because it's right there on the Georgia Guidestones. It's one of it's the very first thing that they want to get rid of people. And so they know that these people serve no, they don't serve them anymore. They can't do anything. They're useless. And getting rid of them becomes a great way of, you know, not being able to use them. So the use becomes really dark and evil. And I tried to portray this, folks, on Friday. And maybe I haven't said this in this way. But when they actually seize full control, the way they're going to test loyalty will be in such a dark, evil way that people will not fathom this. But if, you know, okay, you say you're loyal to us because we're talking about Satan. Now Satan has full control and all of a sudden he's going to say, well, you know, then we need you to, you know, get rid of your family. We need you to kill off your family. We need you to kill off, you know, or you know, do things to prove your loyalty to us. In other words, do such insidious sins and crimes that they now have full control over you, because that's how corruption works. You know, once they've given you some money, that money we gave you, well, that was kind of a bad thing, you know, and we can actually exploit that against you because the way we gave it to you was criminal. Mm-hmm. Oh, and so this is how they catch you. And then they catch you with that, and then they go, okay, well, now we need you to do these sins. We need you to, you know, kill these people, or we need you to actually turn in your family. Or, you know, they start having you, basically making you have sexual relations with people and doing certain types of things, and you have no control. Once they get to that point, your only way is to either fight for your life and break the chains of sin, or what I was trying to convey is the desire of self-preservation and I'll call it position in life. Because, you know, if you're at a level or a position where you have some authority, people don't like to be knocked down a ring. You know, they don't want to actually go from the chef to become the dishwasher, the pot man, you know, cleaning the pots. You know, that's a real demotion, and people will do anything they can to maintain their station in life as well as to survive. And so this is when some of the most carnal instincts kick in, to where it's about survival, preservation. And so when evil takes over, that is when people will truly be tested, especially these people that actually serve no purpose anymore. Well, prove it. Go kill a bunch of people.
Right.
Right. So anyway, as we've kind of covered this up, are we a like people, a like prince? We can move down to, and what is the next one? It's way down here. Is it welfare?
Welfare with Mr. King.
Okay. No. We've already covered that.
Oh, did we do that already?
Yep, we've already covered that. So the next one we're actually going to cover is corporations, which is down a ways, and this is on January 21st. And so they're actually exposing corporations in their time and day. And so one of the things you have to understand is corporations were independent, like a private entity, like a family business corporation that they're talking about. But what had ended up happening as contract law and businesses and corporations started growing and becoming global and so forth, they took on a new form. But go ahead and hit this and we'll talk more about it. So go ahead, the section, Mr. President, go ahead.
This section, Mr. President, has been subject to much dispute and difficulty. I did not come here approving of every paragraph of this Constitution. I supposed this clause dangerous. It has been amply discussed, and I am now convinced that this paragraph is much better as it stands than with the amendment, which is that Congress be restricted in the appointing of time, place, etc., unless one of the state legislatures refuse to make them. I have altered my opinion on this point these are my reasons. It is apparent the intention of the convention was to set Congress on a different ground, that a part should proceed directly from the people and not from their substitutes, the legislatures. Therefore, the legislature ought not to control the elections. The legislature of Rhode Island has lately formed a plan to alter their representation to corporations, which ought to be by numbers. Look at Great Britain, where the injustice of this mode is apparent. 8/10 of the people there have no voice in the elections. A borough of but 2 or 3 cottages has a right to send 2 representatives to Parliament, while Birmingham, a large and populous manufacturing town lately sprung up, cannot send 1. The legislature of Rhode Island are about adopting this plan in order to deprive the towns of Newport and Providence of their weight, and that thereby the legislature may have a power to counteract the will of a majority of the people. GR, this could use some explanation. I think I understand what he's saying, but he's comparing it to Great Britain, and I've got my own feelings about corporations. Can you clarify this for us?
So I don't have all the details, but one of the things that he's basically exposing us to is that Rhode Island, now Rogue Island, was already problematic, that they had already inflated their currency, that they were already not playing well with others, that they were actually a bad actor in the union. And so they were exposing the fact that while the Constitutional Convention and the ratification debates were going on, they were privy to the knowledge that Rhode Island was getting ready to stand up corporations for their government. Instead of representation of the people, it would be representation of the corporations. In other words, the people would be surrendering. See, when your form of government is a democracy, that means everybody has to vote, you don't have to vote, but everybody has the opportunity to choose what laws they're going to enact. In other words, it is truly mob rule. And it is a very slow government because you have to have an election for every issue. So in other words, when you have a crisis come along, all of a sudden there's no food. Well, what do? Well, we have to have an election. It's not very efficient. And so democracy creates, and the framers were very clear about this, that it was a teeter. It would teeter back and forth between anarchy and totalitarianism or despotism, because what would happen is a democracy would then create a king or a despot, a dictator, and say, we empower you, dictator. And so that dictator then seizes power until they die. And then the power goes back to the people, and then they have to choose themselves another dictator.
Right.
And so It constantly goes back and forth, especially in a true democracy where the people, only give it to the person, not a family like a monarchy. And so when you look at, and I hate to take this much time going into this, but I understand that when you create a corporation, then the controllers of the corporation, the board, whatever that board of directors is, they're the ones that are actually choosing who will represent them, not the people. Just like in a representative form of government, you choose a representative. And like I went through earlier today's segment the previous portion, I actually pointed out that your suffrage in government is who you choose in a Republican form of government. The suffrage or the voting and the voice in government is who they choose at a corporate level. This is how they basically said that there were these cottages, just a few cottages, that had full representation where a whole borough didn't. Go ahead.
I'm struggling with the term corporate level. When I think corporate, I think of a state chartered corporation. Do they mean something different here?
No. No, in other words, they created a charter to create a corporation. And that corporation then actually had the say over what they could do and what they couldn't do. In other words, they were the ones that were basically determining who would have the votes for them, who would represent them. And then when it came time for what they were going to do, they had the control of getting that government to do what they wanted, not what the people wanted. So in other words, when you create a corporation, it's an underhanded way of actually losing control of your government.
Because there are people today who, and actually this has happened, there are people who today who said that there was that a corporation has been created out of our government.
Yes.
And that we have lost control over it.
Yes. Even though, see, they tell you that you still get to vote for your representative. But when those representatives come in, and some people are already exposing the fact that they have to sign a bond, that they actually have to basically sign themselves over to where, even though they take a legal oath to support the Constitution, they also basically are taught and shown what they have to do. And legislation is never written by the legislator and actually introduced on the floor. They have moved that responsibility to a corporate control. The government itself controls this at the corporate level, the LSO. It's a legislative service office or whatever. And the LSO is a bunch of lawyers that actually sit down and they are supposed to write the law. Now, if you think that this is all constitutional and this is all good, one way to prove that it's not is because you would think that the LSO would have a measure or a process, a step in their process that would say, is this legislation constitutional? Because the LSO should be held accountable. If a law that comes out of their office makes it to the committee, makes it to the floor, and is voted in, and it is a violation of the Constitution, then who should be accountable for it? If your legislator didn't write it, it came forth from a lobbyist going into the LSO to say, we want to create this bill. All they need to do is find a sponsor. The guy didn't really write it. He's just a sponsor of the bill. The bill wasn't even written in your state.
But you hold the sponsor accountable.
Well, supposedly but there's no accountability even. So this is how today, by using First Amendment petitions, of how we're able to do this in going after and naming names that you voted for it, it violated it. You know, if you don't have, and so this came out as a logical conversation when I was talking to some of the representatives in South Dakota. I said, look, the fact is that if your LSO will actually give you bills that will directly violate the Constitution, then you now no longer have, the people no longer have any control, because the people have this faith that, you know, everybody's supporting the Constitution, that everything that they're doing is constitutional. That's been proven not. The corporations are really controlling this, and this is how, you know, they're able to feed through lobbyists these bills written by corporations, bureaucrats, activists. And to be honest, I'm an activist, but my activism is strictly on the Constitution. So in other words, everything that I am doing is legitimate. It's legitimate. You know, constitutional, it is supporting the Constitution. And if I was to be tried for treason, there was just no way. But everybody else that has fingerprints from the bureaucrats, activists, and, you know, the LSO and the sponsors, all of these people should be denied. They should be stripped of their citizenship, and they should be expelled out of the United States. If we took our citizenship seriously, then we would start stripping people of their citizenship. They're stripping them of their public service and expelling them because they have actually sold. They're trying to sell us out.
Let me give you an example. And this, you know, you and I had this discussion, I think, last week. There is a move to make the central bank digital currency a valid currency. Now, Joe Biden wrote an executive order, and I didn't know until recently how they planned to make that happen. The way they plan to make that happen is through the states, through the UCC legislation. And that came up in Missouri. And one of the things that we pointed out was three things, actually four. One, you took an oath. Two, the Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. Three, Congress shall make no state shall make anything but gold and silver a tender in the payment of debts. And four, and we have this in the Missouri Constitution, Article 3, Section 15, if you violate your oath, you get drummed out of office. So we pointed that out to the representatives, and now this stalled. It's not going to pass in Missouri this year. And so here's and what happened is that I think we had a new representative get handed this piece of legislation.
Right.
He didn't write it. Okay.
Right.
So now my question is, based on the conversation you just had, who's accountable? Now, here's what I think. I think you're handed a piece of legislation, you're an adult, and you're a representative, and you should read it. Right?
Well, even more so. As a citizen, we're required to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. So not only should you, if you are asked to vote for something, then and you are obligated to understand what it is you're voting for, and you will be held accountable. So if you violate your oath, you violate your citizenship, which are both is what you're doing, then you should be stripped. And until we start holding people accountable, remember, folks, I've said this before, that we become a truly an evil and debased society when we try to remove the consequences of sin. In other words, we just forgive, and there's nothing to get people to correct their direction, their ship, and their action. And so bottom line, you know, what we have now is we have this permanent forgiveness because, oh, well, I didn't know, but that's okay, it's the law now. No, actually, it's not the law. You couldn't have done that, and we have to start holding people accountable, because if we're not holding people accountable, then we're not actually doing what we're supposed to do as a part of this system, this immune system that we have in keeping our system clean and pure. So we got less than a minute left, actually half a minute left of the show, so time flies when we get into these types of discussions.
Right.
But this is really important, folks, that when we look at these corporations, the federal government had no authority to form and tell us to, you know, do this. This is why when we combat these sovereign citizen movements, they believe that these are legitimate corporations, and what they've actually done, they've legitimized themselves, and no, that's never been legitimized. What they're doing is actually unconstitutional, and we have to hold them accountable. And so when we come back, folks, Paul, I apologize, you don't even have a chance to say goodbye. So when we come back, we'll bring this right back up so that Paul and I can talk about this in the next show. So please, folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And the best way you can really start getting involved, you got to get smart so you can get involved. We'll be out for now. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.